ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। श्रीमद् भागवतम Canto 3, Chapter 2, Text 23, Translation and Commentary by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Aho bakiyang stana kala kutam jighang sayaya payayad apyasadvi Lebhe gating dhatriyu chitang tano nyang. Dhatriyu chitam. Not dhatriyu chitam. It's flowing. Kang va dayalung sharanang vrajema. Aho baki yang stana kala kutam. Jighang saya paya yadapya sadhvi. Lebhe gating dhatriyo chitang tano nyang. Kang va dayalung sharanang vrajema. Aho baki yang stana kala kutam. Jighang saya paya yadapya sadvi. Lebhe gating dhatriyu chitang tano nyang. Kang va dayalung sharanang vrajema. Alas, how shall I take shelter of one more merciful than he who granted the position of mother to a she-demon, Putana, although she was unfaithful and she prepared deadly poison to be sucked from her breast. Purport, here is an example of the extreme mercy of the Lord even to his enemy. It is said that a noble man accepts the good qualities of a person of doubtful character, just as one accepts nectar from a stock of poison. In his babyhood, he was administered deadly poison by Putana, a she-demon who tried to kill the wonderful baby. And because she was a demon, it was impossible for her to know that the Supreme Lord, even though playing the part of a baby, was no one less than the same Supreme Personality of Godhead. His value as the Supreme Lord did not diminish upon his becoming a baby to please his devotee Yashoda. The Lord may assume the form of a baby or a shape other than that of a human being, but it doesn't make the slightest difference. He is always the same Supreme. A living creature, however powerful he may become by dint of severe penance, can never become equal to the Supreme Lord. Lord Krishna accepted the motherhood of Putana because she pretended to be an affectionate mother, allowing Krishna to suck her breast. The Lord accepts the least qualification of the living entity and awards him the highest reward. That is the standard of his character. Therefore, who but the Lord can be the ultimate shelter? So, continuing discussion of the causeless mercy of Krishna, and that causeless doesn't mean that it's just awarded willy-nilly. That's a colloquial English term, which means just scattered here and there without any consideration whatsoever. So in case we were feeling discouraged, thinking that we have to have so much qualification to get the mercy of Krishna, well, that's the whole point. You don't have to have any material qualification, and even spiritual qualification. Krishna can give his mercy to anyone, anywhere, anytime, as he likes, and he can also withhold it as he likes. He is independent, his mercy is independent, and here is an example of what Srila Prabhupada describes as his extreme mercy. Great mercy. He gave the position to Putana of Dhatri. That's one of the kind of mothers. Dhinu Dhatri Tata Prithvi. That's Atma Mata Guru Patni Brahmani Raja Patnika Dhinu Dhatri Tata Prithvi Sattaita Matarang Smitam. The seven mothers. They're all to be considered mothers. It's one's own biological mother, the wife of the guru, the wife of a brahmana, the wife of the king, because the king is considered like a mother, the cow, and the dhatri, nurse, and the earth. These are all considered mothers. Nurse particularly means there's a term in English called wet nurse, which means the woman who has her own child, and therefore she has milk in her breasts, and she suckles the child of another. So that's what Putana did. She came, and we don't hear in Shastra of anyone but Krishna feeding Krishna breast milk except Yashoda. But although presumably all the other gopis of her age, they could do so because they also have children of around the same age, both boys and girls. But we don't hear but when Putana came, she had such a presence. She was so beautiful, appeared to be so beautiful. It was a false form. Actually, the gopis of Vrindavan, they're the most beautiful. But in the elderly gopis, their beauty is not stressed so much because they're more in the motherly mood toward Krishna. But she appeared to be so beautiful. And one facet of Maya, very prominent facet of Maya, is that people, probably males more than females, tend to think that if a woman is very beautiful, she must be very good. But often it's round the other way. Beauty means they know they can manipulate others with their beauty, and they use that to manipulate others. But anyway, they thought she's so beautiful, and she has this presence. They thought maybe she's Lakshmi herself come to see her husband. So they allowed, she came and she bared her breast, which is quite acceptable in a group of women. And she came with the idea to feed Krishna, which she attempted to do, and Krishna sucked out her life breath. She didn't kill him, he killed her. But he also gave to her the position of an internal spiritual position of a dhatri, a wet nurse. Why did he do it? There's great mercy. Well, there's some antecedent to that also, some background that it's not mentioned here in Bhagavatam, I believe in Garga Sanghita, maybe somewhere else also, that when Bali Maharaj was approached by Vamana Dev, Bali's sister or daughter, it's mentioned differently in different places as far as I remember. Ratnamala, she, with motherly affection, she thought, oh, what a nice boy. Who is, what a beautiful little boy. She had motherly feelings toward him, because even the demons, they may have motherly feelings. Even Hitler's mother must have loved him. Of course, she didn't know he was going to turn out like that. But that feeling of motherly affection is there. So she thought, oh, I would like to suckle that boy at my breast. She thought like that, and when she saw that actually he is our family enemy, it's going on generations after generation, just like in your Montenegro, their family, families, generation after generation, they're enemies of each other. So then she became very angry, and she wanted to kill him. So she got both opportunities. She got the both opportunity to suckle him at her breast, and the opportunity to try to kill him. Which is quite an honor, actually, if you consider that Krishna, he allows only very special living entities to try to physically kill him. Ravana, or if we go back to the old family feud, then Hiranyakashipu, Hiranyaksha, they were the, Hiranyakashipu particularly was the great-grandfather of Bali Maharaj, and Hiranyaksha was Hiranyakashipu's brother. So there, it's a very special opportunity to have the opportunity to have the chance to directly try to kill Krishna. Many people try to kill him by philosophical murder. He has no hands, no legs, no face, no form, no feelings. Or he's just a representation of the ultimate impersonal. So they, many demons, having been unsuccessful in trying to physically kill Krishna, they come again in Kali Yuga, Rakshasa Kalima Shritya, Jayante Brahma Yonishu. They come as sophisticated brahmanas and philosophically try to kill Krishna. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is very merciful. He delivered even the Mayavadis of Varanasi. They were the last one. They're the most difficult. Most, after Chaitanya, well, even before he accepted sannyas, most people of Navadvip, they were in love with him. They're enthralled by him. They joined his Sankirtan. And even the Muslims, involuntarily they joined. They couldn't. Imitatively they chanted Hari Hari, and then they couldn't stop. They went on chanting. But there were others, the fallen, Ninduk, Pashandi, blasphemers, demigod worshippers, I guess you could say. Yes, tu Narayanam Devam, Brahmarudradi Daivata, Samapvainaiva Viksheta, Sapashandi Bhavadruvam. Persons who think that anyone is on the same level of Krishna, even up to the level of Brahma and Shiva, they're called Pashandi, or I don't think there's an English translation for that. You can, infidel, I guess you could say. It's an archaic word in English. So, Pashandi, the fallen student community and the Kashiya Mayavadi, the Mayavadis of Varanasi. So, by taking sannyas, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was able to attract all the ones in Navadvip who were not favorable toward him before he took sannyas. But there were still the Mayavadis of Varanasi. So by some... he attracted them, first of all, by when he went to meet them, by his humility, which is quite in contrast with their own thinking themselves to be Narayana. Danda grahena matrena naro Narayana bhavet. It's in Sanskrit, right? Must be from Shastra, no? You can say anything in Sanskrit. You can say any nonsense you like in Sanskrit. It doesn't mean, just because it's in Sanskrit doesn't mean that it's bona fide. So their idea is that just by accepting a stick, you become God. You take sannyas, and you become Narayana. So they're very puffed up. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was very humble, which struck them. They're surprised at that, because they expected that it was known that there was going to be some clash. They had been invited for lunch, the Mayavadi sannyasis, and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu also, and they were in an aggressive mood. The sannyasis were in an aggressive mood. We got him, we're gonna smash him and tell him what a nonsense he is. And they did, from their point of view. Why are you jumping around like a low class, with all these low class people? The sannyasi is supposed to be the highest. Brahmin is very high class. And then you take sannyas, there's nothing higher. You become God, according to their idea. So they said, what are you doing? This Veda Patandhyan, sannyasira dharma. Chaita Chari Karo Kene. Oh, I can't remember. Exactly, I got the second line wrong. Anyway, they said that the studying the Vedanta and meditation are the dharma, the duties of a sannyasi. So why are you jumping around the streets with all these sentimental, low-class people? They were in an aggressive mood. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came very humbly. But because he was humble, didn't mean that he just submitted to them. Humility doesn't necessarily mean submission. One may be humble in one's dealings with others, but that doesn't mean that humility doesn't mean that anyone says any nonsense and you agree with them. So he was very humble, and he showed his spiritual. He had to let them have some darshan of his spiritual effulgence, so they got some idea that, oh, it looks like he's really Narayan. We're just pretending. They got some idea. And then there was discussion, and he showed them from Shastra. He wasn't a fool. They thought he was just, what's he doing? He must be a fool to jump around the streets. That's just, only fools would do a thing like that. But they were very proud of their learning in Shastra, but he showed them how they were wrong, and he was right, and they should also join in the Sankirtan. So this is his mercy, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mercy. This Karuna Avata, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Nityananda are called Karuna Avata. So all the avatar, they're all Karuna Avata. They come for the purpose of, they descend in this world to give their mercy. But still, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Nityananda are referred to as Karuna Avata, because their mercy is Paramakaruna Pahun Dvijana Nitai Gaura Chanda Sabha Avata Sara Shiromani Kevala Ananda Kanda. So this states that they are the best avatars, because the quality of mercy is most exhibited by them. Because the avatars come to give mercy. So even though all the avatars are the same Krishna, But because they give mercy more than others, so in that sense, from our standpoint as fallen conditioned souls, they're the best for us because they give more mercy. So in this way, they're to be considered the best of all avatars. I'm going to read a little bit from Krishna book, from the chapter Putana Killed, discussing this mercy upon Putana. Not that we have to imitate Putana and think I'll get the mercy like that. Srila Prabhupada explains. Actually, this Krishna book, if you go through it, this Srila Prabhupada practically in every other paragraph, he explains the pastime and then he gives some explanation and or some philosophical understanding. There's so many important instructions in there. Anyway, Srila Prabhupada writes, even a little energy expended in the service of the Lord gives one immense transcendental profit. This is explained in the Bhagavad Gita. Svapamapyasya dharmasya trayate mahato bhayat. Devotional service in Krishna consciousness is so sublime that even a little service rendered to Krishna, knowingly or unknowingly, we've been discussing about unknowing service, knowingly or unknowingly, gives one the greatest transcendental benefit. The system of worshipping Krishna by offering flowers from a tree is also beneficial for the living entity who is confined to the bodily existence of that tree. When flowers and fruits are offered to Krishna, the tree that bore them also receives much benefit indirectly. So that's another example of agyata sukriti. The living being in the entrapped in the body of a tree has no consciousness or idea that I'm serving Krishna. The consciousness is very sankuchita, closed up. But nevertheless, the living being who is in the body of the tree gets the benefit of serving Krishna. And that becomes a devotional asset. Much benefit indirectly. The Ajna process or worshipping procedure is therefore beneficial for everyone. So people will say, why are you wasting time and money doing this puja? But they don't know this is greatly beneficial. It's a great activity of mercy upon the living beings who are in the forms of vegetables, and fruit, and flowers, they all get benefited. And even everyone in the universe gets imperceptibly, they get benefited by the whole universe. Because this universe, someone's worshipping Krishna, so the whole universe is benefited. We may be doing chanting Hare Krishna here, everyone in the whole universe is benefited. Imperceptible, this Srila Prabhupada writes, imperceptible auspiciousness. In one place he writes that this chanting of the holy names gives imperceptible auspiciousness to everyone. So, Krishna is worshipable by great demigods like Brahma and Lord Shiva, and Putana was so fortunate that the same Krishna played in her lap as a little child. The lotus feet of Krishna, which are worshipped by great sages and devotees, were placed on the body of Putana. People worship Krishna and offer him food with great reverence and devotion, but automatically he sucked the milk from the body of Putana. Devotees therefore pray that if, simply by offering something as an enemy, Putana got so much benefit, then who can measure the benefit of worshipping Krishna in love and affection? Therefore only Krishna should be worshipped, for so much benefit awaits the worshipper. Therefore only Krishna should be worshipped. That is the purport of this verse which we've read today. Kangba dayalung sharanam vrajema. Who else is so merciful that I can take shelter of them. So taking shelter, we take shelter of Krishna by worshipping him. To worship means to accept an inferior position and to invoke the blessings, the protection of he who is being worshipped. So it's not that Krishna's mercy will only go to enemies, more it will go to his devotees. If even such a wicked person, this is the point there, that even if such a wicked person as Putana got so much mercy from Krishna, then what to speak of someone who worships Krishna with love and affection? Certainly Krishna will be merciful. But the point is there again, don't take it for granted. Love for Krishna, that of course is not such a not much seen in this world. Sudurlabham, that was discussed yesterday, very rare to attain devotional service, pure devotional service to Krishna. Why is that? Srila Prabhupada writes elsewhere in one of his Bhagavad Gita purports, devotional service to the Lord is not an activity of this material world. It is part of the spiritual world where eternity, bliss, and knowledge predominate. So there is no bhakti in this world. Because bhakti, just like Krishna, he's in this world, but he's not really in it at all. He doesn't partake of the material nature. So if we perform devotional service, we do it in the material world, but it's not really in the material world at all. The devotional service is an activity of the spiritual world. And the more we realize that, and the more we surrender to Krishna, the more we become actually in the spiritual world. To be in the material world means to be bound by the laws of this material world. But Krishna, even though he comes to this world, etadishanam ishasya prakritistho pitadgunai na yujyate. Even though Krishna comes to this world, he's not under the laws of this world. He's aloof from it. Sadatmasthaya. Yata buddhistadashaya. He's always situated in his own transcendental position. And those who take shelter of him also. So if we take shelter in Krishna, then we don't live in the material world. Just like Srila Prabhupada said about himself, that I'm not in New York, I'm in Vrindavan. You can see one of Prabhupada's early lectures, that because his consciousness is always in Vrindavan, that superficially he's in New York, but really he's in the spiritual world. So, bhakti has no material cause. Srila Prabhupada writes again another Bhagavad Gita purport, this Patram Pushpam purport. Without the basic principle of bhakti, nothing can induce the Lord to agree to accept anything from anyone. Bhakti is never causal. It's not in the notes. I wrote it by hand later. Bhakti is never causal. That means that in the material world, you can maybe predict. You can predict if you hit someone on the head with a hammer, they'll scream, cause and effect. Or they might punch you in the head also. Anyway, there'll be some reaction. They'll faint on the floor. It's predictable. It's predictable if someone has malaria and you give them quinine that they'll recover. This is how science works. And they try to find out the cause. What is the cause of the whole universe? It must be a big bang. So it's all seen in terms of cause and effect. What is bhakti is never causal. There's nothing material. There's nothing of this world that will cause bhakti. But bhaktya sanjataya bhaktya. Bhakti comes about by bhakti. Bhakti is the bhakti shakti. That's an asset or a facet of the spiritual world. Then how do we get it if we're in the material world? Then again the point comes, we have to get the association of devotees who are bhakti rasa patra. They carry the bhakti shakti. They are the recipients of the bhakti shakti. That there are two kinds of bhagavats. Ek bhagavata baro, bhagavata shastra, ek bhagavat bhakta bhakti rasa patra. The two kinds of entities that are referred to by the name Bhagavat. One is the Srimad Bhagavatam, the book, and another is the devotee who is the recipient of bhakti rasa. So bhakta sanjatiya bhakta, bhakti comes about by bhakti, just like if you touch one candle which is a light to another candle, it can light another. So, or Srila Prabhupada sometimes uses the analogy electrify. A pure devotee can elect, because the devotee is full of the spiritual energy, can electrify others, as if that electric current passes to others. The current of bhakti. And also that verse in Hari Bhakti Vilas, which I said yesterday, what is that? Sangena Parijayati. Bhaktis tu Bhagavad Bhakta Sangena Parijayati. That bhakti comes about by association with devotees. Sadhu Sangha Krishna Bhakte Shraddha Jadi Hoi Bhakti Fal Prem Hoi Shangshar Jai Khoi. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu explained to Sanatana Goswami. Actually, there are many, many statements in Shastra about the association of devotees. So, translation, Srila Prabhupada gives for this. By associating with a devotee, one awakens his faith in devotional service to Krishna. Because of devotional service, one's dormant love for Krishna awakens, and thus one's material conditions existence comes to an end. It becomes reduced and ultimately comes to an end. So, by associating with devotees, how does this process work? How does one get bhakti? What is prema bhakti? What is it? Begins ādo shraddha. It's not this saying electrify, but it's Srila Prabhupada also scoffed at this idea that the guru touches the disciple and he gets an electric shock and he collapses on the ground. And they both collapse on the ground, one because he's got an electric shock and the other one because he doesn't have any energy left. He gave it all away. And then they both wake up and one's crying and says, and the disciple says to the guru, why are you crying? Because I gave you all my shakti. These are spiritual fairy stories, imitation spiritual fairy stories. This is not how it works. The spiritual energy doesn't decrease. If you send electricity through your copper wire over a long enough distance, it decreases a little bit. There's little resistance in copper. So if you send it three times around the world, there won't be anything left, probably. And then if you plug in your, what do you plug in here? Electric light or something like that. Electric light bulb, then some tiny amount of the wattage or amperage or whatever it is that's coming through, that decreases. There's a limited number of electric lights that you can run on, even on a mains line. That's why we find that in the summer here in India, that it just collapses, and then they switch off the electricity because so many people are running their air conditioners, which are high wattage. So it's limited. But the spiritual, it's a material concept to think that the spiritual energy is also limited in that way. It doesn't decrease. So by associating with devotees, then faith in Krishna consciousness can arise. This principle is not only an association with devotees, it's also an association with non-devotees. If you associate with a Buddhist monk, you might get faith in Buddhism, because they might be in the mode of goodness, and that's impressive to some people. And that creates some kind of atmosphere, and one might become attracted to that. Or the common example Srila Prabhupada often gave you, if you associate with drunkards, then you get faith in drinking. Yeah, they're all drinking, and I should too. This association it's surprising how much people are, everyone's affected by association. We desire to be like others around us, even if they're the worst characters. Why should that be? It's an aspect of inherent human psychology. If we associate with devotees, and if we're pious, especially if we have some piety, some background, then we'll be attracted. That devotees, they go everywhere and speak the same message of Krishna consciousness. You see, Srila Prabhupada traveled all over the world, met all kinds of different people. His message was the same. He might have given it in a more detailed way to some people, or given a certain aspect of it to other people. Basically, his message to everyone was the same. That's one thing, if you can see George Harrison appreciated that. George Harrison, the musician, appreciated it. It was always the same. It wasn't that, so far I've been teaching Krishna consciousness, and let's now teach Scientology, or enough Krishna. Okay, let's experiment, try something else. Today we'll worship Ganesh. He wasn't like that. It was the same message consistently, day after day after day after day, right up to the end of his manifested appearance in this world. So Srila Prabhupada was giving the same message to everyone, but some took it and some took it and others didn't. Others, even after associating with Srila Prabhupada, they might even have been what we call favorable. If you see most of the journalists who met Srila Prabhupada, many of them, journalists and radio interviewers in America, they're actually, most of them were quite respectful to Srila Prabhupada. You don't find many of them were challenging or anything like that. But I don't know of any one of them who took it up seriously, the message that Srila Prabhupada spoke. For them it was a job. They interview so many different kinds of people, and they go on with their life the way they're going on. They don't become influenced by them. But someone who has that already within the heart, that sanskar, that impression, or inclination to Krishna consciousness. Tatratang buddhi samyogam labante paurava dehika. Someone who has the yoga practice in a previous life, when again they come in contact, they might be going on just like any person, but when they come in contact with the yoga principles again, immediately they take it up from that point. And that may be also, someone takes up Ashtanga Yoga because in a previous life they were Ashtanga Yogi. But those who had some contact with Krishna consciousness, they can take to Krishna consciousness. Their faith, immediately. Immediately they have faith. Then why have faith? Because there's great deep philosophy, and we can't study it all in. If we say that, everyone has to, we're trying to preach this philosophy and everyone has to understand it, and then they'll take up Krishna consciousness. But it doesn't really work like that. Because to understand it, it takes so much time to all the details, and who's going to go into the details anyway unless they have some initial faith. So you have to have some initial faith even to start in Krishna consciousness, even though in the beginning you don't really understand much at all of why you're doing what you're doing. But there's some feeling. It's practically on the emotional platform. that yes, this seems to be something very good. It's something I want to be a part of, or I want to find out more about. Sadhu Sangha, Sadhu Sangha, Sarva Shastre Koi Lava Matra, Sadhu Sangha, Sarva Siddhi Hoi, is a very well-known verse. Even by very slight association with devotees, here sadhu means devotee, then one can attain all perfection. That means one can attain the seed of devotional service and then take it on from there by getting that basic faith in devotional service. And then this is discussed by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu about how one can take to devotional service. It has no material cause. That's the point being made here. There's no material cause. Kono bhage karo shongsha koyan muk hoy sadhu sange tobe krishne rati upajoy. There's one word here, kshayon muk, which means that someone's just in the mental situation. Sangsar kshayon muk. They're just in the situation where they're fed up with material life. And at that time, if one is fortunate enough to get the association of a devotee, then he can take to devotional service. So his Krishne Rati Upajai, then his feelings for Krishna may awake. So it's a very delicate moment, because people go through different phases in their lives. So if someone is feeling like that, and they get the association of a devotee, then they can come to Krishna consciousness. We often think to preach Krishna consciousness among young men in India, because they're in a crossroads in their life, especially those who have been educated and they're just getting a job. Previously, people were more or less fixed in what they would do in the future. Yesterday, I asked a young boy, how old is he? Maybe, I don't know, 12 years old or something like that. Then, what are you going to do with your life? What are you going to do? So he said, oh, I'll decide later. But in previously they wouldn't decide. He was from a Sri Rangam Brahmin family. So previously they wouldn't decide. Whatever their father does, they do. That's all. The Baba doesn't think I'll become a Bollywood star. There was no Bollywood to become a star in. The Baba's son becomes a Baba. Now they don't know. They don't know even if they'll get a job. So they're in a situation. They're in between in the college, or maybe they're in the college and they're wondering what's going to happen in future. And they're away from home, especially if they're away from home. That makes them more or less secure. So in that situation where they're not really fitting in anywhere. Even if they're new in the job and then everyone's just screwing them and pushing them down, and they're trying to come up and others are pushing them down. So it's a very good time to catch them. So we have Shastric background for that. Kono bhagye karo, what is it? Kono bhagye karo shangsha kshayan muk hoy. Krishna, sadhu sange tabe Krishna, rati upajai. At that time, if you can catch them and speak to them, yes, this material world, there's no love, there's no happiness. Happiness is in Krishna. Good time to get them. It works more in India because there's some background of piety there, some culture is there. It might not necessarily work in other places. How long should I go on for? Okay, so there's plenty to talk about. So then what happens next? Brahmanda Brahmite Kono Bhagavan Jeev Guru Krishna Prasade Pai Bhakti Lata. The word prasad is here, mercy. So we're talking about mercy, Krishna's mercy. A fortunate person wandering within this universe, up and down, in and out. If they are fortunate, then by the mercy of Guru, by the mercy of Krishna, they get a Guru, and by the mercy of Guru, they get the seed of devotional service, that little faith in devotional service. And then that little faith, Ado Shraddha, that is the beginning. If one has little faith, Tata Sadhu Sangha Tabhajana Kriya. So where does this, how does it come about? What is this faith? What is the cause of it? Why does someone become faithful? Or why do they have some feeling that, yes, this seems to be something very solid that I should explore more? Or even at the beginning, yes, I'm going for this. I'm going to do it. I'm going to come into this Krishna consciousness. Where does that come from? What is the cause? There's no material cause. Jamma koti sukritai na labhyate. Not by planting any number of trees or feeding any number of people, can one get Krishna consciousness? Although that was discussed yesterday, that indirectly one may do so if a devotee takes advantage of the shade tree or whatever. So Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur discusses this, and Srila Prabhupada in his Chaitanya Charitamrita purport has given that translation. That is this bhagya or fortune, it is a result of some accident. Well, generally when we say luck, we think accident, just fortuitously. But then if we know the way this world is going on, the English word luck, the way it's conceived of in the English language by people in England and America, I guess, and Australia and all those other places, they think it's just because they think, well, there was a big bang and then all the atoms came and they joined together, and therefore the world is going on as it is. And there things happen, and if you're a good enough scientist and you could go back to the Big Bang, you could predict that a few million years later, I'd be walking down the street and slip on a banana skin and break my head. Bad luck. But it's all caused by the movement of the atoms. It had to happen because the Big Bang happened in that way. It's all it's just luck. There's no law. Well, there is the law of the movement of atoms and molecules and all this kind of thing, but it's not that I did. Why do I have all this bad luck? Someone's got good luck, I've got bad luck. Why is that? There's no reason. It's just like that. It's all random. But someone who knows teachings of Bhagavad Gita, they understand that we make our own good and bad fortune. We get some good fortune because of activities that we've done in previous life or in this life possibly. And we get bad fortune also because of activities we did in previous life or this life. Purusha prakriti stohi bhunte prakriti jangunan karanam guna sango se sadasadhyoni janma. So we get good or supposedly good or bad bodies due to our association with the material modes of nature, how we act, how we interact with the material energy. So the question then, is this fortune the result of an accident or something else? And let's just get back to that a little bit again. That we have the word bhagya is translated as fortune, good or bad. Sobhagya, you all know that word, the Sobhagyavati, they say of the girl who's married. And Durbhagya, bad luck. So these are terms which come in all Indian languages. Even in Tamil, they say, yeah? Sobhagyavati, they say. Is there another word for common word for good luck or bad luck? There is another word which is generally used. So that's there in all Indian languages. And in Hindi they generally use the Urdu word, kismat. And that's translated as luck. But the concept is very different. Because in the English-speaking world, the concept is it's completely random. And in the dharmic world, it's understood that what is called luck, it's something you didn't expect it to happen, but it happened, either good or bad. But there's a cause in the past of what I did. Or it may be that it may be the blessings of God or the blessings of a sadhu. Generally people come to sadhus for blessings because they think that will increase my good fortune. Please bless me to pass my exams. So by the grace of the sadhu, you can pass. He does all these austerities and you just come and touch his feet and you take some of that for yourself and you can pass your exams. That's the idea. But it's a different concept altogether. But this, what's spoken about as bhagya here, kono bhagyavan jeev, that doesn't mean just by random luck. And it also doesn't mean that in a previous life I did some good karma and now I'm getting it. It's a different meaning. It's the same general meaning, but here bhagya means the true mercy of Krishna, the actual mercy of Krishna. The actual mercy of Krishna is not to get Janmaishvarya Shuta Sri, good birth, wealth, intelligence and education, or a healthy and beautiful body. So in devotional service, some words are understood differently to the way in which they're generally understood. There are many words like that, actually. And we'll find in different schools, just like the Patanjali Yoga school, they'll use the same words that we use, but in a different way. In Buddhism, they'll use the same words that we use, but they have a different... It's the whole philosophy behind it, which gives different meaning. So, even if we're going to discuss, the first thing we have to do is define terms. What do we mean? Just like we may go to someone, do you believe in God? Yeah, I believe in God. But what do they believe in? Not Krishna. Not, they have no idea of six opulence, Shadaishvarya Purna. What do you believe in God? And then, God is a feeling within everyone's heart. God is user defined, whatever they feel like. Whatever comes, if you ask them, what you believe in God? Well, what do you think is God? And then they never thought of it before. And they come up with something. So everything should be clearly understood. Therefore, the purport goes on, in the scriptures, devotional service and pious activity are considered fortunate. They're both considered causes of fortune. So if we say bhagya, that can mean the bhagya to get a visa for America. Or it can mean a visa for Vaikuntha. It's not the same. Because one is material and one is spiritual. Pious activities can be divided into three categories, pious activities that awaken one's dormant Krishna consciousness are called bhaktyanmukhi sukriti. Pious activities that bestow material opulence are called bhoganmukhi sukriti, and pious activities that enable the living entity to merge into the existence of the Supreme are called mokshanmukhi sukriti. Now, this patram pushpam palantayam, that's an activity of bhakti. If it's offered to Krishna, if you offer it to a demigod, it's material. You can get good fortune by offering to Krishna, and get good fortune by offering to a demigod, but it's a different category of good fortune. It's not the same. There are three kinds of pious activities that give rise to bhakti, that give rise to material enjoyment, and that give rise to liberation. It may be the same activity. For instance, pious Hindus bathe in the Ganga. But if one does so with the attitude, this is all Charanamrit, this is come from the lotus feet of Vishnu, Mother Ganga, carry me back to Vishnu, to his lotus feet, that is, with that attitude, that's bhaktyanmukhi sukriti. That nourishes our devotional service. If we do so, Mother Ganga, you clean me of all my sins so that I don't have to suffer for them, and give me some piety so I can enjoy in the heavenly planets. I'll go back beyond your source. They're coming down. And someone is also bathing in the Ganga and thinking, just like the Ganga merges into the sea, I'll merge into the impersonal Brahma Jyoti. So it's the same activity, but with three, it's pious. That's why when Haridas Thakur, they thought he was killed. The Muslims threw him in the Ganga. Why? Because they thought, the Hindus think it's pious, so it must be impious. So to make sure he goes to hell, we'll throw him in the Ganga. That was their idea. Because everything opposite. Their ideas like that. So these last two awards, reading again the purport, these last two awards of pious activity are not actually fortunate. People think, oh, good fortune. I won the lottery. Actually in the West, it's very, very prominent. It's very, very deeply in the consciousness that people equate having lots of money with happiness. Very, very, people, if they get money, they become, oh, so elated. More even than here, even though Indians are more attached to money than Westerners are to sense gratification, to sex, said B.V. Narayan Maharaj. He had experience on both sides, the West and India. So these last two activities, they're not actually fortunate. Just we think it's good fortune, but it's not actual fortune. Pious activities are fortunate when they help one become Krishna conscious, because that's the only really, really auspicious activity. Nothing else is actually auspicious. The good fortune of bhaktyanmukhi is attainable only when one comes in contact with the devotee. Otherwise, who's going to tell us? Who's going to tell us that we should chant Hare Krishna and go to Krishna and make Krishna the center of our lives? Did anyone ever tell you in your school, on the TV, in the newspaper, parents, maybe in some cases here, but they didn't tell you. You have to associate with devotees. No one else is going to tell you. No one else believes in it. By associating with a devotee willingly or unwillingly, one advances in devotional service, and thus one's dormant Krishna consciousness is awakened. Generally, devotees don't force themselves on others. Unwillingly can mean, willingly here can mean that we make a conscious decision. Yes, I'm going to go to the temple and associate with devotees and hear the devotees. But it may be that, we'll come to that after just another page or two. the devotees, they go out, and people without even seeking their association get it. So I'll finish there now. Does anyone have any questions? But that's still to finish. If anyone has any question, you usually have a long class on Sunday, so then you can ask Gokul Chandra Prabhu and he can answer them. All right? You want to continue now? Okay. So I'll finish here, and tomorrow, Krishna willing, I have the last installment of this discussion of bhakti having no material cause. Hare Krishna, all glories to His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada.